Welcome to the Citigroup Day Two Global Technology Conference here live in New York City. This session is featuring IBM, stock ticker IBM. A few housekeeping items: no media and no press are allowed. Disclosures for this event are available at the check-in desk as well as on Citi Velocity. IBM disclosures can be found on the IBM website, both forward-looking and safe harbor statements. Please note that IBM also has their SEC filings, their 10-Ks and 10-Qs there for you to review and to see their risks. Any investor that's subject to MiFID II, please ensure you have the applicable research agreement in place. With that, I'd like to introduce Rick Lewis. Some of you may not know him. Many of you may not know him unless you actually knew him when he was formerly at Hewlett-Packard. And so that's why he's a bit of a familiar face where I've seen him before, but not at IBM. He's the SVP in charge of systems. Also in the audience, we have several other IBM people who may chime in, but it will likely just be Rick doing most of the Q&A here. So welcome, Rick. Thank you so much. You're relatively new to IBM, but not new to technology, not new to enterprise, or not new to systems. But since you're relatively new to IBM and in this forum, could you take a few minutes to share a bit about your background, and then we'll talk about your responsibilities within IBM?
Sure. Thanks a lot, Jim, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. So, yes, I did. I worked at HP, then HPE for a little over 30 years. New to IBM, I've been here just over a year, and I'm having a great time. Really, really love it. My background is I grew up in R&D, chip design, all of that kind of thing, and ultimately, I always gravitated toward the innovative side of the house. So I was lucky enough to help lead some innovations for the industry around scalable x86 architectures, around something called composable infrastructure, which is kind of an evolution of hyperconverged infrastructure, and then more recently around hybrid cloud delivered as a service. And so it was a lot of fun. What brought me to IBM really was the potential for even more of that innovation, the thing that I had enjoyed doing so much in my career. And I looked at the state of the industry where IT is so critical to digital transformation and the assets that IBM had from not just from technology in hardware and software, but also consulting to help clients with that digital transformation. And it just seemed like the perfect time to have a big impact on the industry. So that's my story, and it's been a lot of fun now, a little over a year. Within my group, I have all of our systems business, which includes the Z systems, power systems, our storage, and our infrastructure support. We moved into my group as well.
So, Rick, you mentioned about 30 years in the industry. You mentioned lots of words. You mentioned, transformation, consulting, all this. I just want to make sure everybody in the audience understands within IBM, your responsibilities, it sounds like, is more mainframe and systems, or I just want to make sure we clarify exactly.
It's all of IBM systems. So that's the core of our infrastructure business, and we report the infrastructure segment, which includes Z systems, power, which is based on our power processor, our storage business, which is included in there, and our infrastructure support business as well.
Well, your CEO made a number of bold moves since assuming the role of CEO since 2020. What are you seeing as kind of a relatively new joiner from the outside as far as the most transformative initiatives across the strategy or culture or priorities as you're kind of coming in with fresh eyes?
Sure. So Arvind is a big reason that I joined IBM, just his passion around innovation, around where the market is going. And I think he's kind of done a lot of work across all of those dimensions: strategy, culture, and priorities. Strategy-wise, the entire company is very laser-focused on hybrid cloud and AI. And unless whatever we're doing, if it doesn't fit into that core strategy around hybrid cloud and AI and helping our clients digitally transform in those areas, we're not doing it. So that makes it really simple, and it kind of defines the playing field. And quite honestly, it makes sense because that's where the action is in the industry right now. the industry's kind of gone from this place where everything was about how fast can we get to cloud, cloud, cloud. And really what people learned is a lot of the stuff moved that was easy to move, that was mobile. Now it's all about, okay, how do I transform the rest of my business? And that really puts us in the hybrid cloud space. And AI has never been more relevant because everything that we're doing on simplification and evolving the industry really is getting more and more powered by AI. So we're laser focused on that. That's the strategy part. Culture-wise, it's really about getting back to the roots of the IBM company, which is really at its core, it's about clients first, client success. It's about innovation that matters, and it's about trust and personal responsibility in delivering in those areas. And the final thing you asked about was priorities. Priority is to accelerate the growth of the company, and we're all over that. Everything that we're doing in that hybrid cloud and AI space is about accelerating growth, and it's just a really fun time. The team collaborates well together, and bringing together consulting software, the Red Hat OpenShift platform, and our infrastructure brings together a powerful combination in this space of hybrid cloud and AI. So it's a lot of fun.
So Rick, talk about bringing things forward and accelerating. If I remember right, you just recently launched a new mainframe or Z system, and I think my numbers are right. Is it the Z16?
Z16.
So tell me about the characteristics. You know, what's in the Z16 that wasn't maybe in the 15, 14, or what's some of the innovation in this cycle?
Yeah, so Z16, something we're really proud of. We just started shipping here in Q2. And we're off to a great start. I think the reason Z16 is resonating so well really has to do with the fact that the team, even before I was here, had actual clients involved in the design process. So specifically saying what features they thought should have priority and what kind of innovations they needed. And of course, there's the usual tremendous performance gains that they would expect from every iteration, but there are new things in there that they were really wanting pretty badly. One was around being able to do AI inferencing at scale. Things like improved cyber resiliency, something called quantum safe computing. A little sidebar on that, quantum safe, all of the data that is encrypted in the industry now is potentially vulnerable once we have quantum computing for quantum computers to crack that encryption and basically make that data vulnerable. And so we're the first in the industry to be able to have quantum safe, we call it encryption, built into those platforms. And the data is encrypted while it's being processed, while it's moved out to disk, et cetera. So big innovation in that area. And that was something that clients really wanted. And then finally, really making it fit well in a hybrid cloud environment, which means features like being able to do your development and test in the cloud and making sure that things are linked together well from a development point of view. In fact, one of our big clients, State Farm Insurance, the number one insurance provider in the U.S., about 84 million people on State Farm Insurance. They wanted to move to a DevOps environment for all of their core transaction processing, and they moved to that capability on Z with the latest generation and now do all of their DevOps in the cloud, then run the actual applications on the Z platform. Good news is Z16 is new, but we had very strong results in Q2, the very first quarter of shipment of Z16, and that's even compared, you know, building on the Z15 cycle, which was very strong for us as well. So the Z business is alive and well and healthy and really an important part of our portfolio.
And so since it just launched in Q2, I assume you've been getting a little bit of feedback. Anything you can share with us about feedback so far on the Z16 from clients? And do they rip out the old Z14s or 15s, or they put them side by side, or does it depend upon maybe customer by customer?
Everything you can imagine. We have clients who add it just for capacity. We have other clients who want to modernize and take advantage of the new features, and they'll replace what's out there. The feedback we have so far, which is the most important feedback, is that they love it and it's high quality. You know, whenever you ship a new complex program, I mean, these are space shuttle level, you know, complexity to ship these platforms. You really want to make sure that it's kind of quiet. And what I mean by that is people aren't saying, hey, why, what is this? This thing doesn't seem to be working. It's absolutely quiet. Things are going well. Clients are using them in production, and we're super happy about how that rollout has gone so far.
Rick, you actually led to my next question. That's a little bit about the focus on hybrid cloud and AI strategy. Can you talk a little bit about how the Z is driving value in a hybrid cloud world, and then also a little bit about AI, and maybe give some examples so people can grasp it here in the audience?
Sure. So I touched on the hybrid cloud a little bit with that State Farm example, but that's a little bit about dev tests and how people develop their applications. What we find very often is that clients want to do some combination of, you know, whether it's like Citi or one that I'm thinking of right now is really around Royal Bank of Canada. They want their client experience to evolve and be digitally transformed. All of us want to be able to look on our phone and kind of say, hey, here's what's my balance. I want to move funds. I want it to happen really quickly and have that happen, yet know that it's completely secure, that no one else can get into my bank account, see what money I have or where I moved it or worst case, move it. And so, you know, these hybrid applications where you have the mobile kind of interface living in the cloud, the application that talks to your phone, and then the back end of that is running on a Z16. And Royal Bank of Canada did a complete modernization to develop an application. RBC Mobile is what it's called. And we worked to kind of make that hybrid application seamless, deliver a new customer experience. And now it's the number one rated financial mobile application in all of Canada. And so that's something we're really proud of. But it kind of talks about how Z is not just about, okay, bank transactions behind the scene, but it lives in a hybrid cloud environment where there's data at the very edge inside your phone and controlling things that are going on inside the Z platform. So that's the hybrid cloud side. And you mentioned AI. One of the cool things in Z16 that hasn't been done in the industry before, those clients worked with us and said, look, what we really are concerned about, fraud. Fraud detection is massive in our industry. And the state of the industry at that time was really, you take a bunch of data for transactions that happened in a day, you put that on a back office computer and you kind of see, okay, did any of those transactions look suspect? And then if you see that, then you go follow up and try to unravel the transaction, call up people and say, hey, what was this? All of that kind of thing. With the AI inferencing capability that we have in the processor, you can now do that what the industry calls inline. That means at the time the transaction occurs, if it looks suspect due to traffic patterns or you know, a bunch of small transactions, then a really big one or something like that, the processor can actually halt that transaction before it ever occurs. So there's no find out later and come back and try to unravel, but it can happen in line. Those are tremendous value add features that leverage AI technology and hybrid cloud technology to make a Z platform that's been around for a long time and runs the backbone of our economy, make it modern so that it's relevant in this new age and enables a lot of the things that we take for granted that happen behind the scenes.
Well, Rick, I may embarrass myself by telling you this little story, but at Citibank, my credit card recently got put on a fraud alert because I made like 12 Botox transactions in a different state that I don't live in. And I asked my wife and she chuckled and she said, I have no idea what you're talking about. And fortunately, it all went to pending and none of it cleared.
Yeah.
And it was just interesting. It was like Botox, 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 Botox. And anyway,
I was going to say, I don't see any wrinkles.
My cheeks and wrinkles feel pretty good. But it was at that point, like you said, it was, you know, small transactions. The first one was like $15 and it was $45, then it was like $95 and $100.
Yeah.
And then they texted me, you know, please call us immediately. And they ended that. So,
yeah.
And I think Citibank is one of your larger customers, I think, on the mainframes, right?
Citibank is a large mainframe customer and a really great use case of not only using it for the core of transaction processing, but also doing application stacking on what we call the non-traditional MIPS or the Linux kind of MIPS to help sustainability, meaning one server that runs a whole lot of applications rather than racks and racks of separate power supplies and all those things. one server that then is consolidated and is secure and reliable. So we've been a partner of Cities for a very long time. I'm the executive sponsor and I love that account. It's a lot of fun to work with them.
Well, next time you're on stage, hopefully you'll have more Citibank examples than RBC examples. Yeah, it's very big in financial institutions. Great comment. But for AI on that same topic, it seems like we're in the early innings of AI. Like what we talk about now just seems kind of almost like the entry of where the Z16 could go and AI could go in the future.
I completely agree with you. I mean, AI, it's early innings or it's honestly warm-ups. I mean, really just we have a big business already in AI, but I think we're just scratching the surface. And that's why I'm so excited about not just hybrid cloud, but IBM's potential in AI. And we've been an early mover in that market, and you learn a lot being the early mover. But we're applying it not just in my systems business with core technologies down to the chip, but also up through the rest of the stack. And we have AI practices in consulting. So it's a big area of investment and growth for IBM.
Hey, Rick, can you talk a little bit about the power solutions?
Yes.
And maybe, first of all, explain it to investors about, you know, what's different about that versus the mainframe, and then we'll talk about power solutions.
Sure. So Z itself is kind of the core backbone of the big banks, big insurance companies, but anywhere where you're doing massive amounts of transaction processing, and you need that to occur with ultimate security, ultimate reliability, and massive throughput, you know, millions of transactions per second across a global kind of basis. Our power systems are really designed for enterprise Linux, AIX, our Unix platform, and our IBMI. And usually what they're about is things that are very database focused, things that are memory intensive, and still need that high mission critical reliability, availability, and serviceability. And so, you know, you think of it as maybe a little bit smaller, maybe retail stores or still some insurance, but some branch offices, some banking, some core banking, but tends to be the smaller banks geographically, that kind of thing. But really where it's memory intensive and a lot of database. And we see, you know, we've been developing, we have industry leading benchmarks in our power systems. And they're really, you know, fit for purpose computing is something we talk about a lot, which is their sweet spot is these databases. And those databases are the core of customer relationship management software, of manufacturing supply chain software. And so you can imagine in this environment of challenges with supply chain and dynamic economy, you know, swings where I have lots of transactions, then I have little transact, then I have a lot. Really having that capability is super important. In fact, one of our more recent deals is the world's largest auto parts supplier. Some of you are probably able to guess who that is. Just modernized with the Power 10 systems, a new SAP S4 HANA in-memory database capability to streamline their whole order processing thing. So for their clients and their customers, there's a lot better visibility, a lot more granularity as to what the parts availability are. You can imagine how important that is when you're managing longer and longer supply chains, having that real granularity of when will this part be available? How long in advance do I have to order it? That's something, an example of where Power 10 has really got a sweet spot in the market and showing good momentum. We shipped Power 10 last fall in the high end, and we just started shipping in the low end, the scale out systems for branch offices and those kind of things. And we've seen great momentum on that. So we're on a very strong product cycle across my business in Z and in Power right now.
And Rick, for Power, where's the sweet spot for being best optimized? Like I think about mainframes, about the credit card Botox transactions I had. You know, I think about the airlines, about, you know, booking, is there a seat available and things like that. For Power, where's the best optimization for it?
Databases with memory intensive activities. So dynamic environments. Some airline booking is actually done on Power systems. Things where the amount of data that you need to process is massive, and you need to do it on a really, really short time frame, real-time data processing. That's where it's kind of sweet spot is. And it also always lives in mission critical areas. This is where, you know, the reliability of the system, it cannot go down. The availability, the fact that we can service pieces of that machine without taking down the machine, all of those things really, I mean, it runs businesses. That's about the best way to explain. Runs your manufacturing line, runs your retail operations when you're, you know, transacting in the store. It's that kind of thing rather than the true core back office banking transactions, although some power systems are used for those in the smaller banks.
When we think about the bigger macro environment, you know, you see interest rates going higher.
Yeah.
You see mortgage rates going higher. You have different employment trends. You have challenges of physical conflict in Russia, Ukraine. You have COVID lockdowns. When you think about the bigger macro environment, can you compare it to prior downturns or cycles in any manner?
Sure. So what we find, we're in the value space, right? These are mission critical clients. And it certainly is unprecedented, the amount of macro turmoil that's going on in the world right now, at least for the, you know, the time that I've been in the IT industry, which is a very long time. But what we've kind of seen in prior Z cycles, if you will, is that it's fairly immune to the macro environment, meaning when your most mission critical core transactions need to happen, they need to happen whether, you know, things are up or things are down. And even, you know, we actually saw really strong transaction volume even during COVID because a lot of people were at home moving money around or reinvesting or doing things like that. So when you thought, hey, the world's kind of shut down, transaction volume must go down and Z systems process transactions, this is going to have a huge impact. And it really didn't. It weathered through that. 2008, kind of looking back at history there when the economy, Z was pretty solid through there. So I think, you know, you just find that it's not necessarily correlated to the macro environment, those core mission critical things, because they're of such core value to what goes on. It's like keeping on the electricity. You still got to have power. You still have to make these things work. So we've been happy with how it weathers those storms.
So it sounds like there are a lot more strategic investments of infrastructure that are needed for the strategy of such companies and business decisions, rather than a business is good or business are soft, spend more or less.
It's a lot more related to exactly what you just said. Yeah.
Okay. With concerns of a slowdown, when you turn on the TV, look at newspapers, some of the companies presenting down the hall yesterday, today, and tomorrow, what are you hearing from your enterprise customers about demand?
Yeah. So a little bit related to what I just said, we're in the value space, but I think we're also, you have to recognize the era we're in the industry. And that is IT, two things. One, IT is really either a competitive advantage or a competitive weapon, or however you want to think about that. It's key to survival now for all businesses. There was a time when I worked in this industry long ago where IT was kind of a back office concern. Minimize the cost, just make sure the stuff happens and you know, hopefully nothing goes down. If I never hear about it, it's a good thing. Now in every C-suite, there's a conversation going on about how are we modernizing? How are we digitally transforming? What's our hybrid cloud solution look like? How fast are we moving to cloud? All of those conversations are in the C-suite constantly. And so that kind of gives you a feel for the demand. Those conversations haven't changed. And even with the environment, some of these challenges that we see on supply chain and with dynamic transaction volume swinging up and down and all of those things, the answer to a lot of those challenges is actually IT. So, you know, I'm an engineer at heart. And so simple equations kind of appeal to me. One that I always think of in my head is for when it comes to growth, is greater than GDP. I mean, that's really kind of where it's at. So, you know, if you look at IT growth rates, we see in the B2B space, so maybe we should say IT B2B is greater than GDP. And that's kind of what we kind of see in the market today. It's very, very resilient to that. And I think it has to do with the competitive landscape and the challenges and what key role IT is playing in helping us work through the competitive landscape and in the challenges.
Are you seeing any differences for demand across your geographic regions or industries, whether it be Europe versus U.S. or end market industries?
You know, certainly the macro environment has differences, but as you're seeing, you know, it seems like most of the global economies have been doing similar things around quantitative easing and all that, you know, all of that stuff. So we're not seeing dramatic differences across geos, and we're honestly not seeing dramatic differences between banking and insurance and manufacturing and retail. Industries are solid. That B2B space seems to be very resilient. Now, sometimes it'll lag a little bit on the consumer space, and certainly, you know, I've heard from my friends in consumer land that they're seeing some slowdown, et cetera. But in the B2B space, we're not seeing that at this point.
Taking a step back, the past couple of years have been pretty challenging from a supply chain perspective. I mean, simply getting the parts to assemble a Z16 hasn't been easy. Can you talk to us a little bit about how you've mitigated or how you've progressed through a more challenging time of supply chain?
Sure. I mean, I would say in my career, this is the most challenging supply chain environment that I've seen. And I can also say I'm the most proud of a team mitigating that challenging supply chain environment. Q2, we started to ship Z16, as we mentioned. A lot of you are into the numbers. You know, we had a very strong Z quarter, and we essentially had no limitation on our shipment whatsoever. I think there are a couple of reasons for that. One is I honestly think I have the best supply chain team in the world. It's within my group that does that. And being proactive about managing the supplier relationships, predicting demand, forecasting the market, even just being laser focused on what are the key parts that we think could have a problem and making sure that we've got those in place. And our volumes aren't massive, right? So we can kind of really custom tailor make that suit of supply chain readiness that we need. So that'd be the first thing is just how strong our supply chain team is. The second thing that I would mention is that IBM, we do this for other companies. We provide software for supply chain planning, and we provide consulting on how to digitally transform your supply chain process. And so we have the brain power and the software inside the company that helps you do this in a fantastic way. So, of course, we take advantage of that for our own selfish purposes. And so far, so good, you know, and we think we're well positioned for the future in the supply chain. So it's something that is a real competitive advantage for us as a company.
You mentioned launching the Z16 with the supply chain issues was really hard, given your entire career of history. Now that it has successfully launched and you're getting good feedback, is the supply chain getting a little bit easier or stable or worse?
I would say from an industry point of view, and you can look at reports from all of our infrastructure competitors, we're all still working really hard to make sure that we're in good places. IBM hasn't, we haven't said anything about, oh, in this quarter we had an impact. I definitely have noticed competitors and some of those companies that have been saying that. That hasn't been the case for us, and we're working hard to try to make sure it never is the case for us. So far, so good. You said, is it easy? It is not easy. I'm going to say that. But I think we know what we're doing, and we're doing a really good job of managing.
The chip companies and suppliers up and down the hall yesterday and today have been talking about putting in price increases, trying to pass through higher raw material costs, inflationary costs, labor costs. How have you managed to deal with it, such an inflationary environment?
Yeah, certainly inflation is pretty new phenomenon for us here in the recent years. But we know what space we're in, and we're in the value space, right? And we price for that value to our clients. And they have a historical expectation of how much that price for value will increase over time. And certainly as inflation has risen, we've increased beyond that historical average. But it's actually gone really well because those clients understand, they know they're paying more for a loaf of bread. They would expect that I'm paying more for parts for a Z. And so we've increased prices just for, you know, appropriate with what the market is. And it's not just Z, it's power, it's storage, it's even our infrastructure support. So it's something that we monitor really closely. But again, you know, we're not in the ultimate price sensitive segment of the market. We're in the value segment. And so we adjust to make sure that we're staying on top of inflation and making the business make sense.
Focus a little bit on growth and profitability. Can you remind investors how to think about the overall revenue and profit profile of the infrastructure segment, whether it be, you know, near term or midterm?
Yeah. So what we talk about when we talk about infrastructure is in the midterm, we're looking to be flat and then growing or shrinking based on product cycles. When we come out with a brand new technology, we have a huge uptake of clients that want that extra capacity, that want those new features around AI, that want those new features around quantum safe, et cetera. And so you'll see a strong cycle. And then when we have to compare to that a year later, it always makes it challenging. So flattish with plus and minus on the cycle. In terms of margins, you asked that question. Midterm model is mid-teens in margins. That's what we dial the business into. And we look to be very stable in that, and we were that way in our Q2 results and very happy. In fact, we were on the upper end of that, I think at around 17, in Q2. And that's where we're at, and we're very proud of that. And it's a stable, healthy business, so we keep driving it.
Rick, maybe one last question before we wrap it up. Looking over the next few years, what are the top priorities in your business? Not overall IBM, but specifically to you.
Yeah. So, you know, coming into IBM, I personally had a few key things that I thought about. Okay, how can I help, you know, this organization, this company, and where we're going? And does that align with where the CEO wants to go? And that alignment was just so evident from the first conversation, that it's been fun to kind of watch that play out. I mentioned, you know, hey, midterm model is flat and up and down with product cycles. You know, one of my objectives is in the long term to have us growing, and with up and down with product cycles. And how do you do that? You know, people always ask that. Well, there's potential in the business, in the infrastructure space. There's a lot of data is growing exponentially in the market, and so storage is part of my business. Well, that data needs to go somewhere. It needs to be processed. We have transaction processing, but it needs to be stored, easily recalled. And so I'm optimistic about some of our new plays in storage. We've announced storage as a service, which we hadn't had before. We've announced container-ready, hyper-converged infrastructure, our storage fusion products. Those are all incubation. You know, they're very early. They're not in the midterm. We're just growing those businesses, but I'm optimistic about them. Infrastructure support, something we moved into my group, treating it more as a product and less as a kind of an add-on later and selling more of that upfront. I think that's an opportunity for us, looking forward. So, really it's about those kind of things within my segment. And then the big one for me, I knew this competing with IBM from the outside, that if I had to compete just on a product by product basis, I wasn't that scared of IBM. When it was challenging to compete with IBM is when IBM brought the big IBM consulting capabilities, software, middleware, a full stack, Red Hat OpenShift, and the containers associated with that, combined with their storage or combined with their infrastructure, or combined with the global network of infrastructure support people that we have. When you put that big package together, it's extremely formidable. And so one of the missions I have, high priority for me, is to make sure we're maximizing that with Better Together. So programs around integrated container Red Hat support into our infrastructure, we're ramping that business. Things like Data Fabric, where storage and our data and AI software are more closely related together. You know, I grew up innovating, and to me, it's like there are more toys in the toolbox now to innovate with, and I'm really excited about that and working in the infrastructure space with the rest of IBM to kind of get the most out of that set of tools and toys in the toolbox, so.
Well, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us here, both in person as well as on the webcast. Thank you, IBM, for presenting here today. Thank you.
Thank you.